All right, Project, welcome back. This episode of The After Show is going to be a little bit different. We have decided that we're just going to bank some listener questions for the coming weeks. And instead, we are going to just kind of, as the title explains, we're going to drop on you today 10 things that you can do to, or 10 reasons you're not seeing progress in the gym, and basically the strategies that you can implement to use to see more progress. Now, what is the purpose of doing something like this? It's not going to be a permanent format for the after show. The reason we're doing this is because we're thinking about creating a bonus episode, not every single week, but we wanted to create a timeless episode that... by the way, we got your feedback from Throwback Thursday. We will be doing it. They'll probably be starting up next month. But the timeless idea of this new format that we're just trialing today is we want to give you a single episode topic. So let's take fasting, for example. We want to do like 45 minutes to an hour just on fasting. We want to have a legitimate format.
That's basically a fast in itself.
Yeah, dude, it's insane. And we want to have like the structure. We want to have evidence. We want to have research. We want to go through the research. We want to give
There's no evidence for fasting.
We want to give you our experiences, our personal experiences with it, our client experiences with it, and then kind of give you a summary. And the idea behind something like that would be you can take these topics that, you know, essentially have a lot of... I guess a lot of people on one side saying it works and a lot of people on the other side saying it doesn't, and just kind of helping you come to your own conclusion with the stuff that we present you and have it be shareable. You know, I trained some people. Well, I started training my barber, and, you know, it's funny because he's like, I would just call him Gen Pop, right? And what you find is really interesting is because he hasn't come through any of our systems at the gym, is he just... He comes into the session and he just asks me all these like really funny things. And what I realize is the masses really still have no education, no idea about tons of stuff. And we want to provide you guys with stuff that you can send to other people that they can just open up and listen to. You go, hey, you know, you always ask me about carbohydrates and like, are they good? Are they evil? Or calories or whatever? Here, these guys did a whole episode on it, listen to it and just learn about it. So we'll hopefully create something really timeless, really valuable like that. Because I wanted to go to him. I'm like, oh, yeah, I did a whole episode on fasting. Just go listen to it. And he would just learn everything there is about it. So we wanted to create stuff like that. Just a single topic episode. Usually probably around like the biggest myths of the fitness industry or the most talked about subjects. Like obviously keto diets. That would be like a whole episode. Mm. So just some stuff like that. And obviously these episodes, we can't do them all the time because of the amount of effort and research that we'll have and planning we'll have to put into it. To make it that valuable, it will take a bit of time. So we just don't have the time to do them every week yet, but that would be good. At least 1 to 2 a month.
Yeah.
It'd be really cool. So today it's kind of like a single topic. We do have a review at the end. We just wanted to keep some after show format in there. But today we're just going to list off 10 reasons, that you're not seeing results in the gym. Maybe you identify with one, maybe you identify with all 10, but regardless, hopefully you can take something out of this. That's extremely valuable. Sweet.
Kick it off.
Number one, consistency. Interesting. So, this is, I mean, we've talked about this recently, but ever since we stopped competing in CrossFit, like you guys know that, actually, before we even get into that, you know, I was hearing Eric Weinstein talk about on Joe Rogan's podcast. He was talking about how people that are kind of put themselves out there in the media and that sort of stuff, I guess it's kind of what we're doing on a small scale here is, if people get really attached to the old version of these people, he was using the example of singers, right? They get really attached to a certain era or a certain album that person was, and then they change, right? They put out new music or we start talking about different subjects. We interview different kinds of people. We're more interested in other aspects of fitness and health. The old crowd gets upset. You know, they want it to go back to the way it was. And so he was saying, you know, it's just important to make a public announcement that we've changed, you know, this is how we used to think, but we have every right to change. And we're just letting you know that we're moving into a new phase now. So that's how I kind of feel just about this podcast in general. And I think anyone that agrees and kind of sticks along with that and is interested in the new era or the new subjects has stuck around. And I think that maybe the crowd that really wanted just the Brett Fikowski interviews, the Matt Fraser interviews and that sort of stuff have maybe gravitated to the more pure CrossFit media that's out there at the moment.
Or just died.
Potentially under a barbell. So we got consistency. So basically how I thought of this was I have found it a lot harder and more challenging to be more consistent with my training now that my focus is not competing as a CrossFit athlete. And everything changed around that, right? Everything in terms of my daily routine, all the practices that I would incorporate into my life to make sure that my physical output and my performance was number one has completely changed. And as a result, because my day is not structured to make my training most optimal, it does sometimes get pushed aside. For example, I only trained 3 times last week. I did 1 day on the 4-day program. 1 day. Shit. We should probably tell the listeners about they're expecting a 160 kilo clean and a 20-minute assault bike.
10 minutes.
10 minutes, 200-calorie assault bike challenge. What's the date today? July 8th?
Yep.
Okay, so technically we're supposed to be testing it tomorrow. Going to give you a little bit of an update. I guess this ties into consistency. getting sidetracked on point one badly. I hurt my back pretty severely. It started getting really heavy. Obviously, I was pushing the weights up. I was starting to do singles around 140, 150. And every time I would get out of my chair, I was getting referral pain down my left side. So unfortunately, I just don't have the mindset anymore that I did when I was 21, 22 to be able to push it and think that the ultimate end goal of lifting that weight or getting that workout time was worth the sacrifice to put my body on the line. That part of me is just dead. I just can't push through it. I can't sacrifice my health anymore for a number. And yeah, I think it was just a good lesson for me and for you guys maybe to learn from my experience that it's sometimes just not worth it. It's not worth being in pain 23 hours of the day, walking around, having your left glute basically go numb half the day and just have like referral pain where you've always got to stand up from the desk and move around. It's just not worth it for that one moment for the 160 kilo clean. Maybe it was like when I was younger, but I just couldn't do it. Just couldn't push through it. Yeah. It was just hurting way too much. Yeah. So I've canned the goal. So maybe I need to revisit it. The journaling was obviously good. There's only so many times you can write in serious pain, injured, can't push through before you start to realize, hey, I'm probably not going to hit this goal and be okay with it. So it was good. It was a different way to approach. Obviously, I had great success on the last goal. So this one was kind of a different spin on it. But I think it was all just good lessons, good value from it.
Yeah.
So, where are you at? Are you going to test tomorrow?
I'm going to test. I'm not going to do it tomorrow. I'm just deciding exactly where to do it. Just because we've obviously switched over most of our bikes to the Airdyne bikes, and the old bikes we do have are just a little bit inconsistent, and twice they've like the time has turned off during my bike.
Oh really?
And this like absolutely cannot happen. You know when you rattle it too much, how it sometimes just like resets your bike, like ding.
Oh really?
And it starts back at zero. So I hit up a friend of ours who runs a gym in between the two of us that has a few of them.
Yeah.
Might go over and do it there. But yeah, I'm pretty confident. I had a really good session when we were on our way down south. We dropped it at that really cool transformation gym.
Oh, yeah. I saw you on the bike.
Yep. And I did 100 calories in like under 5 minutes, rested 2 minutes, and then did another 100 under 5 minutes as well. It was like pretty close. It's going to take out the 2 minute rest.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, it's been good. It has been a lot of bike.
Yeah.
I really enjoy it. Probably a little bit keen to do like maybe not 4 sessions a week on the bike, but a little bit less. But yeah, it has been a really good goal. I've really, really enjoyed it. And it really does carry over other things. Like I've been doing quite a bit of running. I do think all the time on the assault bike is carried over to the running as well.
Mm. Yeah, because you're running the city to surf, right?
Yep.
Yeah, I'm walking it.
Been doing like 7 to 12 Ks on Sundays. And I think that it's mostly only running I've been doing, but just doing so much aerobic work, it just really carries over.
It's a 16K run, right?
Only 14.
14K. Mm. How long is that going to take you reckon? What's the goal?
Like 70 minutes.
70 yeah. minutes.
I'm definitely not
a lot of running.
Not very good at like running is not. My thighs are too big. Like they chafe. The chafing is out of control when I run.
Yeah, yeah. And your ass is massive. It's just wiggling
not
around.
100% built for power. I'm definitely built more for
speed.
For the air bike and the power to weight on the air bike.
Yeah. Anyway, point one, consistency.
Mm.
Point is, it's very hard to be consistent, but there are a few factors to consider. One, if you're starting your exercise program in your 30s, I feel like it's the most, from what we've seen from, you know, hundreds of clients, potentially thousands of clients that we've worked with, it's much harder to start a brand new fitness journey and make changes when you're in your 40s. And we haven't really started too many people in their 50s, but that's obviously going to be even harder than that. But you can only, like every decade that passes, obviously you have less and less energy, right? The body, the changes that you make in your body are going to be smaller. You're going to have like from the same amount of training that you put in, the same amount of work, say three, you know, weights training sessions a week, the effect or the ability your body has to change in your 30s, just because of the amount of energy that your body has to spend on rebuilding muscle tissue, you know, the level of protein synthesis your body is at, how high your testosterone is for men and women. It's a lot higher in your 30s, right? It's obviously really high in your 20s. It's a lot higher in your 30s. Sorry, it's a little bit less in your 30s. And then in your 40s, it really starts to drop. 50s, it drops even more. It's much harder to make significant changes back then. So I feel like in terms of consistency, especially how the brain works as well, right? The tracks that you're laying down, the mental patterns, the behaviors, everything that you do in your life, it becomes a lot more solidified, a lot more predictable in your 40s. And your 30s is that pathway to your 40s. So if you're not changing those habits and routines in your 30s or in your 20s, it's much harder to get out of the patterns that you've laid tracks on for two decades, right? From like through your 20s and 30s and then having to change them in your 40s. So being consistent earlier in your life is the point I'm getting to. It's going to serve you a lot better, I feel. Yeah. Sort of my first point. Do you want to add to that?
No, it's essential. I mean, it's everybody that makes good progress in the gym is consistent. Like it is, it's level one.
Yeah. I mean, in terms of being consistent, I think most people would rather do a 5 day a week and miss a whole week than go to the gym and do four sessions or three sessions or the same amount of sessions, two and three, but it was spread over 2 weeks. They feel like unless I trained for 5 days in that week, it wasn't a proper week's training. It's not true.
Like if I was to, I mean, clarify it even more, would you agree that potentially this is also why we don't right now do competing or much competing in CrossFit training, because we know we can't be that consistent with that type of training?
Yeah.
Because of injuries and stuff like that, I'm like, I can't be that consistent with that type of training. So right. I know that I'm not going to see much progress in those areas.
Yeah.
And that was like a realization that I had in those areas as well. I think a lot of people do, is they like do it for a long time and then they get a lot of injuries and niggles and they're like, they're not consistent anymore.
Yeah.
Because they're trying to do something that's like too hard for their body. Whereas I've seen a lot of progress recently on the air bike and in my cardio because I've been super consistent, but I haven't, it's like I've been able to do that frequently.
Yeah.
Because I haven't been injured.
But also the changes you make are so incremental the longer you've been doing it. So in order to make a significant change that you would like to make, it takes more work.
Even more.
So.
And you might not be able to do that.
Exactly. So yeah, those are some big things on consistency. Like if you think about how muscles, especially for muscle growth, how it responds to a stimulus, you know, you just kind of have that like 5-7 day window for when like the effects down regulate. And so if you're stimulating, you know, the same muscle group, if you're doing a full body workout, you know, 2-3 times a week, you're staying on that path of progress. You're creating enough stimulus in the body for it to adapt. Obviously people adapt at different rates. Some are higher fast responders, some are slow responders, but making sure that you're consistently hitting the body with the right stimulus, you know, across months and years is much better than being really inconsistent, sending a very loud signal for a week and then no signal for another week, right? You kind of lose all the effects. So building it up over the time, it's just that consistency. Think about think about anyone with a manual labor job, right? Think about guys that throw cement over their shoulder. They've been doing it for 3 decades. Man, they could put you on their shoulder and walk with you for 5 kilometers, you know, just because they've been doing that shit every single day. They're just consistent with it. Same thing. If you're consistent with like bad posture, right? If you're consistent with sitting at a desk, you're going to feel the physical repercussions of that sort of behavior. Anyway, next one. Whew, it's going to take a while. I'll try not to blab on too much. Second one. Too much weight with poor form. Pretty obvious is, I think most people at the start, like when they begin their lifting journey, especially spending time in some commercial fitness gyms, kind of, it's different when you go into a CrossFit gym because you like have a coach and you're being told what to do and your expectations are set in the right place. Well, they should be. And obviously people, like a really good coach or a good culture won't let people lift with poor form. I know it happened a lot in the early days of CrossFit. I feel like it's changed a bit now. You know, poor form is like, it's like outlawed in CrossFit gyms because they got so much flack for it at the start. But I think a lot of people are embarrassed when they go to a global gym to have such a small amount of weight on the bar. Because they're kind of doing it by themselves, I feel like they're trying to add a little bit more because they don't want to, they just, their ego's in there, right? Like I saw this guy this morning doing incline bench press. And he had 60 kilos on, and he was a small guy. And I thought, man, 60 kilos is a lot of weight for a proper incline bench press. And I watched him do like 3 or 4 reps, and he the bar didn't even get below his eyes, his eye level. And he's sitting up on a 45 degrees. So he's basically doing tricep extensions. He should take the weight down and do a full range of motion. I mean, you're going to work way more muscles. Obviously, you're going to develop much better strength curve, all this sort of stuff. But I think there's a whole thing around commercial fitness is you come in and you could be surrounded by 10 guys who have been lifting for over a decade. And you just feel embarrassed to put a tiny amount of weight on the bar. And as a result, you probably put too much weight on too quickly and compromise your form. And so that's a big reason people lose progress is, and especially when they do have good form and they add too much weight, is eventually they need to realize that, okay, at some point, I'm going to have to just take some weight back and work on better form. You know, if I can deadlift, you know, 250 kilos, for example, you're going to have to do a lot of reps at like 170, 180, potentially even 140, just working on different aspects of your form with the same lift, not even an accessory exercise. But I think because people can lift so much weight, they always want to put more weight on because they can. And just because you can doesn't mean you should. I think as a result, that, you know, leads to injuries or it just leads to people not seeing any progress. So, you know, manipulating the sets, reps, weight on the bar is like super important long term. Okay, third point, not enough protein. Yeah, I think that I've even seen it myself. If I'm not making a conscious effort to eat more protein, I fall under what my daily recommendation is. And the best way, I think the most optimal level for most people is 1 gram per pound of body weight. So if I'm like 220 pounds right now, I'll eat 220 grams of protein. Well, that's what I'll be aiming for. I really struggle to make it all up with real food. If I have 50 grams of protein 3 to 4 times a day, it gets me pretty close, but I'm going to need a shake on top of that, maybe a bar, something like that. Less ideal sources, but in order to hit that number, I do find I need some supplements to kind of top it off at the end. Yeah, I would just run that formula and then just track it for a day and just find out if you're eating enough protein or not. Like if you're doing any resistance training, you need to be around that number. It's just essential.
Well, also, it's just so much better to overshoot your protein than undershoot your protein.
Unless you're trying to lose weight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But even in losing weight, you know, it's so filling that if you end up eating like more protein and less carbohydrates and fat,
because
of the thermic effect of food, it still works out. Obviously, if you've got to keep your total calories in check.
Mm.
But, I mean, if you overshoot that particular macronutrient compared to the others, it works pretty well for weight loss and muscle gain.
Mm.
So, I just generally, I think most people, you're better off just like, hey, you're better off having slightly extra protein than slightly too less.
Yeah. Yeah. For sure. Although, like, that being said, even if you are eating a lot of protein, there are limits to how much protein. All your protein gets absorbed, but there's only so much that gets used from the research that is kind of like the maximal amount of benefits that you can make off X amount of grams of protein in terms of muscle building. And they reckon the number's around like 30 grams. So if you have a meal with 60 grams of protein, you're not going to get the same level of benefit. You're not going to get, you know, twice the benefit as if you had 30 grams of protein. You're going to get around the same effect. Obviously, you've got more calories in there, but that's what a lot of the research says, that muscle building signal, that ability to synthesize proteins kind of max out around that 30, 40 grams mark across all people. So shoveling, you know, 100 grams of protein doesn't equate to 3 to 4 times more of a muscle building effect. So that's just one thing to consider as well. So you don't have to have giant meals of protein. Cool. Next one I got is poor programming. That's obviously a really big one. I think the standard of programming is so high now that anyone has access to really good programs, and I think it's essential to be on a really good program these days. You could get by in the past with average programming just because you didn't have access to it and people weren't as educated. You can get really good programs these days. You can get them anywhere. Marcus Phillips, functional bodybuilding. You know, we had him on 2 weeks ago. Excellent program. You wouldn't have to ever use a different program again. Jason Kalipa's NC Collective, all his programs, like, really solid. Some of the best shit in the industry. I think that a lot of people stall out on progress because whoever's writing the program either hasn't individualized it enough for that person, or really is just sort of like they don't really know what good programming is. Like, it looks good on paper, but they don't actually understand how the body works and how you need deload weeks and you need varying rep ranges, and maybe they're just a little bit old school on their programming. So I guess it always does depend on the goal as well. Sometimes people are fitting the programs to the wrong goals. If someone wants, you know, a weight loss program, for example, there's not really such thing as a weight loss program, but yeah, say someone, you know, is going on a resistance training program, but maybe they really want to get pull-ups or whatever, might not necessarily be the best program. So it does really depend as well what your goals are. So that'd be one other thing. So I'd say if you don't feel like your program is that good, or you know where it comes from, or you have legitimate faith in this coach or the gym or whatever, then that could be a reason to consider that you're not getting that good of results. Now, I would say it's very likely most people listening to this are on a pretty good program at this point, except if you're programming for yourself. Most people that program for themselves aren't doing a very good job. That's just because you never do what you should be doing. You always do what you feel like doing. And what you feel like doing always varies day to day. Number five, too many supplements, not enough food. So, you know, we love True Protein, like hand on heart, it's the best shit ever. But we also know that it's no substitute for food. It's not. Food is always going to be superior to supplements. That's just how it is. How you use supplements is, one, I think convenience is probably the biggest thing. Like, if you train early in the morning, you got to have a shower, you got to get in your suit, you got to go to the, you know, go to work, you might not have enough time to sit down and, like, heat up potatoes, like, heat up, you know, rice and pork and chicken and broccoli and all this stuff, and then, like, use a fork to eat it. Like, that's a whole, that's a 30, 40-minute process. If you throw down a shake, yeah, you miss tons of stuff that you would if you had a complete meal, but you have the convenience and it's better than not getting it in. So focusing too much on supplements to replace food, I feel like is a really bad thing. Now, supplements for health, so like vitamins and activated nutrients, that sort of stuff, I can justify having that most days because I'm not really, I'm still making an effort with my food to get as much in, but it's like, I just can't, like, I'm still going to have all the vegetables that I can in the day. I'm going to have my green shake. I'm going to have vegetables every meal. But there's just like tons of weird vegetables with weird vitamins that I'm just not going to have time to make. I don't even know where to find half of them, you know? So having something like activated nutrients is just covering off that extra 1 or 2% that I miss. And I think that some people expect too much from supplements. It was funny, one of the girls downstairs at the comp, she may even be listening to this, where we have the studio, she was like, oh, so like what's like the best protein to get? She's like, you know, because there's like a weight gain protein, there's like a weight loss protein, there's like a lean protein, there's like a vegan protein, all this. And I was like, it's all the same. It's all the same shit. You know, like there are tiny differences, but they essentially are no different. Obviously, there's an animal sourced one and a plant sourced one. But at the end of the day, protein's protein. It's not gonna vary too much when it's in a bag and it's powdered form, right? Some's going to digest better. Some's going to digest worse. Some's going to taste better. Some's going to taste worse. But at the end of the day, there's not like a weight loss protein versus like a weight gain protein necessarily if they're just protein. So, too much supplements, not enough food. Just something to consider. If you're really trying to replace heaps of food with supplements, it's a really bad idea. Yeah, it should. What would you say like the maximum, say a 2,000 calorie diet, what would be like the maximum calories from supplements you think is appropriate?
Like, I don't see there's any reason to go over like 60 grams of protein a day. As soon as someone's like, I have more than 2 scoops of protein, I'm like, something has gone wrong here, because the way I usually say it is like, yeah, you might have one after you work out and then like one before you go to bed or some other time you really needed it. But when you go to three, it's like, well, now it's like the majority of your protein comes from supplements.
Yeah.
And you've like gone over that threshold. It's gone from like 1/3 to 2/3. And this just usually doesn't leave you in a good place, because then you're probably only having like one meal.
Yeah.
So you're probably not getting enough fiber in and potentially like essential fat sources, which mostly come from animal products.
Yeah.
So that's usually the threshold.
I'd say like max 25% of your overall protein intake should come from supplements.
Yeah.
Yeah. And even then, that is like, I would say that's like way, that's like on the high end.
And that usually works out to like, hey, for most people, it's like protein once.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And on occasional, it'll be twice.
Yeah. All right. I'll let you jump in, Raph.
Cool. I think I've fallen for all those five in the past. But I am going to go with
five.
We
only speak from experience, people.
That, yeah, also come from, I would say, mostly my experience and also what I've seen in hundreds of clients at the gym. This first one, I think, is incredibly common, and only you can really know if it's true to you. But it's that, you know, every single program has high intensity days and low intensity days. And what I see and what I've experienced in the past is that every day becomes a medium day. So the high intensity days are not truly high intensity, and then the low intensity days become medium intensity as well. And a personal story of how this happened is, you know, we used to train all day in the gym. We'd pretty much like, you know, do a massive morning session, late afternoon session, following the training plan. And because there was so much to do, like the really high intensity stuff, like wouldn't be that high intensity because your hands were so sore and like you knew, even if it was the first thing of the day, you had so much more to go in that day that just psychologically you would hold yourself back from going too much. And then equally, I think the lower intensity stuff always became a bit higher intensity for a couple of reasons. One, sometimes it's just like it's more boring and uncomfortable to do something actually low intensity than to just pick it up a notch where you can't think about it too much and go for it. It's kind of like if you're doing like an hour easy on the rower. Sometimes it's easy just to finish hard and feel good about it than just to continually actually do it easy.
Yeah.
And you see that constantly because you like get more of an endorphin rush and everything like that. And because, you know, at that time for us, it was one of the only things we had to do that day.
Yeah.
So, like, it was really hard to do a full, easy, proper day. Because then you just felt like a worthless, like, I've done nothing today.
Yeah.
Because it was the main thing you had to do.
Well, especially because the sport was measured in intensity, right? So, intensity was valued so highly. So, if you're on the lower end of intensity, you feel like you're not doing your sport.
Yeah, and you just built the habit of just, like, you know, pushing hard. And you just end up building this habit of basically going, what you think is probably hard, it's probably medium.
Yeah.
And it's probably every day. And then you just adapt really poorly to that. And how, I guess, I realized this in particular was, so we had that time where it was heaps and heaps of volume, really medium intensity. And then when we moved to two locations, basically at that point, it was like, we were too busy to do that anymore. Because I was traveling between gyms. And I said, like, honestly, just too much going on to do that. So we stopped. I stopped training with you a lot. And I stopped just, like, hanging out in the gym training all day. And because I was waking up 4:30 to coach every morning, then I had work to do. It would just turn out that I'd be like, man, I'm just going to train once. And even on my program, there was often like twice a day of training, but I would just be like, it's just not happening. And I would just like do the one. But because I had like skipped the morning stuff, I was like, I'm going to kill it in this second session. Because I was like, all those like, you know, other people that are doing both, I'm just going to kill them so much in this next session that I'll still be better than them.
Yeah.
And I think I got so much better at CrossFit during that time because I was doing less. But when it was time to go, it was like 100% time to go. And my high intensity was so much higher. And then equally on the lower stuff, I just wouldn't go and train with anybody because I was like, well, I was going to get this done really quickly. And then because I was by myself, I would actually probably do it at a lower intensity.
The natural limiters were there.
Yeah, because I was like, oh man, I'm just going to get this done. Like, I'm not going to go out and train with a coach. I'm not going to go out and train with any training partners. Like, it's just going to be done and it'll be quick and it will be easy. So just naturally, like just literally the time constraints turned everything into really high intensity and lower intensity. And man, you hear all the time from athletes that go from like having a job and then they go into like full-time athletes. Sometimes they don't progress any much more. And often it's that. It's because they start training all day. They start training medium intensity.
Well, that's what they said. Max used to say about Noah's program, Noah Olsen, is that when he came to me, he was really good at going at a moderate intensity all day.
Because it was good enough for him to win every workout at his old gym.
Yeah. But he didn't know how to really turn it on and he didn't know how to chill.
Yeah. It's really hard. You know, someone gives you like 100% on the air bike. Like, you basically need somebody else to get you to 100%, or you have to really get yourself up for it.
Yeah.
So that is a big one. And I think that, honestly, most people that listen to this do probably already fall into that trap, particularly if you go to a class format, because a class encourages that sort of behavior.
Yeah.
It really encourages, hey, like, don't slack off. But also, if you're not slacking off, inherently, you don't hit high days. Yeah. You have to have a low day to hit a high day.
Yeah.
So that's number one. I promise my next will be quicker. Number two is not getting bought fully into the program. Like Lockie mentioned, most people do get really good programs these days. But a trap I've fallen into, I think probably you've fallen into as well, is that you find yourself changing more than a third of the program. Like, you are not bought. You've either got a crazy injury or you're not bought into the program. And then as soon as you fall down that route, it's just like, hey, you should probably just get a program you are bought into. Because unless you are 100% on the plan, you're just not going to give it your all effort. Because you just don't really believe in it. So if you find yourself like changing everything every day or second guessing stuff, like you're just not bought into the program, you know, move on until you are bought in.
Yeah.
And don't be afraid of changing it up. Number three, in terms of nutrition, I think the only real thing I've always noticed is that when I get my macronutrients wrong, so not the total calories, that I find not too hard because you can use your fullness signals, but there's no real good signals for getting your macronutrient balance correct.
No, you can't do it intuitively.
You can't. No. You can't. It's really challenging. So that's where I've fallen a mistake in the past is maybe having too much fat or too little carbs or where I really need to have more carbs and less fat or just not hitting my protein. That is just super hard to do intuitively. Whereas I can really listen to my body and say, okay, I need to eat just past full.
Mm.
And that'll often put me into a weight gain scenario or just less than full for weight loss. But you have to really think clearly about how many macronutrients you're getting in terms of carbs, fat, and protein. so you can get the correct amounts for training.
So what is this main reason here? Well, how do you...
Well, I think that sometimes in the past, particularly if you're doing a lot of glycolytic training, like you have to make sure you have enough carbohydrates.
Yeah.
And if you just try and eat intuitively, you might hit your total calorie goals, but you're not really going to get a good feeling of like, I need to eat more carbs to get the most out of this training.
So you're saying like you do need to track if you want to make...
Yeah, I think you have to get
more
it right.
accurate progress. Yeah. Yeah, I'd agree. I think when you go intuitively, you get really, really good. And I think that it's an important phase to know. Mm. You really get really good at maintaining where you're at.
Yep.
I think you need that. You think you... People like maintenance is like a dirty word to people.
Mm.
It's like, no. Maintenance is like where you should be most of your life, or where you'll end up being most of your life. A gaining and a losing phase, you probably do through your 20s, maybe into your 30s. But after a while, you just be like, you know, I just want to eat. I want to maintain. I just want to feel good. I just want to optimize other areas of my life. So learning how to eat intuitively and maintain where you're at, it's super important. But like you said, if you want to drive up performance, if you want to drive up weight gain or weight loss, you do need to track.
Yeah, and I mean, it's different times of the season and depending on what you're training will have severely different macronutrient demands.
Yep.
If you're doing like all slow biking and stuff, like your high fat diet might work really well, then you change it up and you're burning a lot more glycogen, like your calories might be the same, but you have to drastically change your macros. So that's my number three. Number four is just your training environment. And I see it goes both ways. I think your training environment can become toxic because there's like it's too competitive, and then it's really hard to have low days or really hard to strip it back and use the correct weight on exercises because every single time people are G-ing you up to go a bit harder.
Yeah.
I think that works for some sports, but I think in the gym particularly, sometimes that can go badly for people. Yeah. I think for some people it always works because they're just, A, often they're the strongest person in the gym, so they don't get pushed that much
because
they just win, or B, they're just like super resilient. So even though they're getting pushed, they're not getting injured and they're still adapting. But for most mortals, you don't want that, and then you also don't want the flip side. With a training environment, nobody pushes you.
But I also think that if you rely too much on your training environment for results, it's a bad thing because when you don't have the environment, you don't know how to train by yourself. Mm. And it doesn't mean that you need to train in an environment for the intensity, but you need to learn how to train by yourself because, well, quite often you might end up by yourself, but you just need to know how to motivate yourself internally. I think that's important.
Yeah, of course. I mean, even if you're by yourself, that is still an environment.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you sort of take stock of your environment and, you know, by yourself at a global gym is different to by yourself in a empty CrossFit gym.
Yeah. Or in a garage.
Yeah, compared to doing extras up the back, but there's still people there. All those things matter. You know, I find a lot of people who are, like, competitive will just often say, hey, I'm training by myself, but I would love to have other people in the gym.
Yeah.
And that, it can be a really good environment.
Yeah.
Because there's other people there, but you're sticking to your plan.
Yeah.
Everyone's different.
Yeah.
But you just need to take stock of what your environment... Sometimes over time, your environment just gets worse and worse and you find yourself spending half the session on your phone.
Yeah.
And it's just a shitty environment. And then the last one is... I mean, I don't know if it's flipping the question, but you might be seeing good progress, but your just expectations of what your progress was going to be are incorrect.
Yeah.
So you... Like, all the time, people are like, man, I've seen no progress. My squat has gone up 7 kilos since the start of the year.
Yeah.
I'm like, no, that's progress.
Yeah, yeah.
But to them, it's not because their expectations were incorrect from the start.
Yeah.
Or they're potentially just like focusing on like one thing. And that one thing, has not got better. But 6 or 7 other things have got better. And that's just training. Training is not linear across the board. So also just, you know, taking track. Are you like actually celebrating your wins? And are your expectations correct?
Yeah. That's a good point. Yeah. I mean, desires and expectations are essentially the things that lead people to unhappiness, right? So, trying not to desire too many things with your training and then setting your expectations extremely low ultimately will give you the best long-term success, I believe. Yeah, and get off Instagram.
Man, okay. They're hard. It's so hard to set. True training goals are really hard to set.
Yeah, of course.
Because you're trying to predict like physiological changes in the body.
Quite unpredictable.
Yeah, in an unpredictable environment. Of your life.
Yeah.
So if you think like, oh, I can set a goal, 5% improvement over the next... I mean, you're joking.
Yeah.
You're absolutely joking. Sometimes you can do way better. Sometimes it's just not going to happen.
Well, if you look at genetically, and then when they study muscle biopsies and cells in muscles, majority of people are very, very slow, some of them are non-adapters to exercise. And that's the majority of people. So unless you've been like super sporty, you've been in the gym really early on, most people should set their expectations low because genetically now they're in a position, and I guess you could say a bit of nature and nurture, their body's just not going to put on much muscle. It's not going to lose tons of body fat very quickly. So they're just a very slow adapter. So it's going to be about point number one, consistency, to make those changes. However, people that have been training their whole life, right, they might take 2 years off, 3 years off, but because their body is just full of those satellite cells that know how to turn it on, know how to get people jacked, know how to put on muscle, know how to lose body fat, it can happen very quickly. They can turn the ship around very quickly. But for other people, it's all new for them. So it's totally different expectations. It's a big one. All right. Guys, before we jump into the movie review, hopefully you found that helpful. If you guys are...
Surely one of those 10.
Yeah, surely something in there. You can flick it through to a friend or share it with a training partner or just put it on your Instagram. We'd appreciate that. But we'll jump into this movie review. But just before, if you guys have not started listening to it yet, highly recommend the Beyond Macros podcast. Just go type in Beyond Macros wherever you're listening to this, and you guys will be able to turn on Matt's podcast and listen to a bit of his information. It's really good stuff.
Yeah, and if you are interested in getting the coaching business certification, so learning how to coach nutrition at your gym or with online clients, the early bird offer ends July 15th. So yep. Just go to beyondmacros.com/certification.
And like Mike and Adi said in our podcast with them, like 2 or 3 weeks ago we posted it, they said a gym that is not offering nutrition coaching within the next decade will close. They guaranteed it. So if you're not, it's a good place to start.
They're going to close your gym. They're going to personally come over. No, it is true. And also, I mean, the flip side of this is that if it's not and you start, you will clean up.
Yeah.
Because you have just qualified people in there desperate for it. Just step up.
Yeah, absolutely. Cool. All right. So the movie we watched was 42.
Mm.
42 is the number of Jackie Robinson. Jackie Robinson was the first Major League Baseball player that is black. The movie is based on a true story, obviously. It's just like a feature film, I guess.
Yeah.
And I can't remember who the actor for Jackie was, but he did an extremely good job. They had a really good actors lineup in that movie. And I think they did extremely well. These cultural movies are pretty interesting because...
Oh, it's the same guy that plays Black Panther.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. These movies are interesting because they're recounting, you know, some pretty controversial times of America's history. And obviously, this is a Hollywood movie, right? So, it's kind of like the modern era reflecting on the past era. I think they did a pretty good job. Yeah. It's a pretty enjoyable, pretty historical sort of thing, these sort of moments, right? Like, it's just weird to think now because, like, they dominate. Like, black people dominate so many sports, right? Basketball, yeah. NFL. A lot of them are in baseball now. I don't know. I don't watch a lot of baseball, so it's hard to say. But not in the same way they dominate the NFL and the basketball.
I think they still do dominate. They can hit far.
The MLB. Yeah. But, I mean, like, the ratio to
the same.
Black players in the league.
Part of that probably is also cultural. I think they just don't sit around playing baseball as much because they need more resources than a basketball game.
Yeah.
I don't know much about baseball either, which is also probably why I loved it because I didn't really know what was going to happen.
Right.
Because I wasn't like a massive baseball fan.
Yeah.
But it was really, really good. It's like, it is so crazy to watch because like most professional sports players are black.
Yeah.
So it seems so funny. It's like the first one.
Yeah.
It's really like I think the beginning was a bit slow and I'm like, oh, it's like a bit of a cheesy American movie, but then it gets really good.
What you realize is how it's so hard to put yourself in his shoes now, but the coach or the owner of the team,
Ricky.
Yeah. How he stuck his neck out for this player. I mean, he did it as a business move.
Yep.
Cause he thought it would like sell more tickets and it would bring, you know, a whole different population into baseball, which it did, but man, that guy really stuck his neck out for that. Like, that was a big move.
Yeah.
That was huge. Like, that could have ended everything for him. And he had to cop a lot of that shit. Like, him putting himself out there like that. You could imagine the death threats. Didn't he have, like, cabinets
full of
death threats?
One of the best movies, Harrison Ford plays the owner.
Yeah.
And one of the baseball team. Yeah, of the baseball team. One of the best moments of the movie. It doesn't really spoil anything, but one of the white guys gets, like, a death threat or a near death threat.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, my God, I got this death threat letter.
Yeah.
Harrison Ford pulls out, like just literally just
like
files of death threats to the black player,
yeah.
Jackie Robinson. Like, would have been hundreds and hundreds.
Yeah.
It is a really, really good... enjoyable watch, particularly I think if you know about it, it's probably still really enjoyable, right?
Yeah.
But just even if you don't know anything about baseball, it's still awesome.
Yeah, it's a cultural experience.
Yeah.
Right? It's a historical experience.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty powerful stuff. So, I'll give it a 3.5 out of 5.
Yeah, I'm going to give it a 4 out of 5. Really enjoyed it. It's like 2 hours in length, so you definitely got the popcorn ready.
Yeah.
But definitely worth a watch.
Nice. All right, guys, there you go. 42 on Netflix. All right. Guys, if you enjoyed this episode, like I said, give it a share, tell someone about it, and hopefully you got some value out of that first part. We'll be back to the normal after show format next week. Thanks, guys.